Hello, I'm Eric Topol, Editor-in-Chief of Medscape, and it's a real special privilege today to be visiting with Carl Zimmer, who is one of the most accomplished journalists in science and in medicine, and we're going to have a chance to explore some of his work and thoughts on things. So welcome, Carl.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So, Carl, I know you were back at Yale in English. That was your degree. Mm-hmm. And then somehow you took on the beat of life. How did that happen?
Well, I had always been interested in science and biology in particular. I didn't really put two and two together. I was wanting to be a writer in high school, you know, writing for my school newspaper, and was the idea I had going to college. And I would take science classes on the side just because I enjoyed them. And that should have been a clue, but it took me a while to figure it out. And I just got a job as an assistant copy editor at a science magazine, Discover Magazine, a couple years out of college. And I was reading these stories and saying, wow, this is actually really interesting. And then they would let me write a couple tiny stories, and I really enjoyed that. And that was basically it. I stayed there for 10 years before going out on my own.
Well, it's kind of an extraordinary jump because you went from that post to become, you know, this multi-award-winning journalist with three times the Association for Advancement of Science and Guggenheim Fellowship and the National Academy of Science, and I don't know if I have all of them, Stephen Jay Gould. I mean, so many. So what was your secret? What is it that you do when you put together these pieces that maybe separates you from others?
I don't know. I think I'd need somebody else to really judge that as readers. I mean, all I'm trying to do is to tell stories about science, particularly about life. I see that as a very broad portfolio. So, you know, I recently just wrote an article about the oldest fossils of life on Earth and, writing about genome sequencing this week. So I see that all as all being part of trying to understand what life is and how we fit into it.
Well, somehow or other, it's become very popular. I don't know. But you work with Matter, the column in the New York Times, and in Stat News. Are those the two main things that you write for these days?
For the past couple of years, yeah. I write at this column for the New York Times once a week, and then I'm a contributor, a national correspondent for Stat, and so every month I'm doing things for them. But, I sort of balance things also with other places, other magazines like National Geographic, and then books as well. You know, it's as a writer, you're always trying to balance different projects to figure out how much you can handle without overloading.
Yeah, I neglected to mention you've written 12 books. So you have another one that you're cooking right now?
Yeah, writing a book about heredity.
Well, that's kind of apropos to this whole genomic medicine story.
Absolutely.
That's great. Well, let's just go back. I think you have Matter as a column. How do you pick? Do you pick the stories or do you get them assigned? How does it work?
I really prefer to write about things that I pick that really excite me. I mean, sometimes people will say, would you mind writing about this? And if my heart's not in it, and if I don't think it's a particularly good study or subject, I just get very resentful and cranky. And, you know, it really comes through in the article. So I like to look for stories that really excite me. I can't wait to get to work in the morning to get at that story. And so I look around, and I'm just constantly trying to pull in stories and ideas from meetings or looking at what's coming up in journals or just getting on the phone with scientists and saying, like, what's something that's just come out that's really excited you? Because it's impossible to really evaluate everything in biomedicine. I mean, it's insane how much is coming out. So you need ways to navigate through that world.
And this concept of being quite prolific. It is not a week where there's not something in the Times and here and there. I say, how do you balance it all? How do you do it?
Well, sometimes scientists ask me this, or doctors, and I say, well, you have to remember, I don't have a lab. I don't do experiments. I don't teach full time. I don't have patients. I write. And that's what I do. And I like to do it, you know. I mean, because people will say, wow, you write a lot. How do you do that? I hate it. And I'll say, well, I could start by not hating it. And you know, there's nothing I like better than doing research, talking with people, getting notes together, and figuring out how to tell a story. I enjoy it. Love
it. One of the things that you are prolific in, which perhaps is also a source, is Twitter.
Yes.
I get a lot of my news from you, actually. I keep up with the world outside of science, like in politics and what's going on with all the turmoil in our country through you. But how do you do that? That is, you could easily get distracted from the focus of the life beat and then, you know, trying to figure out what's going to happen to this country of ours.
Well, Twitter and other kinds of social media, to me as a journalist, are fascinating in how they channel information and how news flows through these systems. And you can build something like Twitter into something to really, like, let you know about things in a way that really complements their traditional journalism. you know, it's very hard to keep up with all the news and politics. But, you know, if there is a... if there are political journalists, there are a few political journalists who I really, really admire, and they're on Twitter and they're very careful about the information they provide. That kind of guides me to the things that I have time to read, and then I like to play that service for people. And I think that science and politics—they've always been intertwined—and people who claim that there's no politics in science are fooling themselves. I mean, you know, it's always been that way. I think a lot of people in the scientific community are becoming keenly aware of just how much politics and science can intersect. And so, sometimes people say, like, why don't you stick to the science? And I'd say, like, well, you know, let's see if your research is supported in a few months, by the government. We'll find out how you feel about it then.
And do you get the sense for yourself that it distracts you from your focus?
My wife definitely gets a sense of that, because she'll walk into my office and see on my big screen, like a big tweet deck window, and she'll say, "How's that book coming?" it's a nice distraction from working on big projects. These little chunks of information. I like it, and who knows how long Twitter will stay in business. They're not doing it. They're not as big as Facebook or Snapchat, so we'll see. But I'm enjoying it for now.
No, I do as well, and appreciate the time you take to cite others and send me the links. Now, I think here at Future Genomic Medicine, you gave this pretty hilarious talk yesterday. It was kind of stunning about you getting your genome sequenced. Can you kind of summarize what that experience was like?
It was a very peculiar experience, because I've written about genomics for 20 years, I guess. I mean, even before there were genomes being sequenced, really. And so I got an opportunity to go to a meeting where you could get your genome sequenced as part of the experience, and there would be clinical geneticists who would look at it and so on. And it was very exciting, but and it was really built up like, oh, I'm going to discover myself. I got a clinical report, basically said you have no disease causing variants. Goodbye. That was it.
That's worth a few thousand or so.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, at least I got stat to pay for it. Right. But I was a little worried, because I thought, okay, well, they're going to be a little annoyed that they paid for my genome, and what do I have to say about it? But it's an odd thing, because it's kind of like going to the doctor's office. You're not feeling well, and you kind of want them to tell you that you've got some exotic serious thing. And if they say, just go sleep for a couple of days, you'll be better, you almost feel annoyed. Like, I wanted to find out something. And, a boring genome is a good genome. But, I knew that, I wasn't going to let things stop there. And so I needed to get my hands on the raw data, because I wanted to write a piece for Stat about it. And, as getting data, as you have often said, it can be a big challenge. And I didn't really appreciate just how much of a challenge it is just to be able to get your hands on a hard drive with the raw data from the of the reads of your genome.
Yeah.
it took me months, actually. And just finding all these kind of like little tricks and so on that I write about in STAT. And, you know, I would talk to scientists who themselves study the human genome and are really curious to look at their own genome to see how they fit into the scope of humanity, and they can't figure out how to do it. They'd have to be part of a research study, but then they'd have to have the research study give them the genome under certain rules. You can't just get it. And right. There are some of these new genomics companies that are offering the sort of this custom, you know, genome sequencing. They're not offering that BAM file, that raw data. They're not offering it either. Nobody wants to give you the data. And, you know, I give people the benefit of the doubt, and I understand that they are dealing with a very tricky landscape of regulation, and, you know, they've seen what happened to 23andMe, and so they're going to play it safe. I get that, but it leaves us in this kind of absurd situation.
No, it's crazy. It's your DNA. It should be yours, and this hiding behind regulatory, and it's crazy stuff. But you did then do a pretty serious hunt, and you went to various labs and got information, and then you went even beyond that, I guess, with the warrior gene. So can you tell us a bit about all these other things you found out?
Yeah, well, I wanted to sort of see how scientists study genomes, and I just said, here's mine. Let's do it. And it was really fascinating seeing how bioinformatics works, you know, how you take all of this raw data, a lot of which is wrong, and assemble it into a sequence that you can trust and that you can analyze. Everybody involved, I ended up working with a couple dozen scientists. Everybody involved just said, look, this is, you know, there's a little bit of art to this science, you know, because like I went to one group and they looked at how many of these variants I had, how many SNPs I had compared to the reference genome. One group said about 3.5 million. And I was like, oh, cool. And, you know, they could look at them and say things about it. So I went to another group and they said, and here we have calculated your SNPs and you have 3.9 million SNPs. Isn't that interesting? And it was very awkward because I was like, okay, there's this other group, and they tell me I've got 3.5 million. I mean, that's 400,000. There's no way you can both be right. And it felt very awkward to say that to him because he'd worked really hard with all his students on this. And he's like, oh, yeah. You know, like, he started to explain to me how different approaches to sequencing genome will give you different results. Even just using the same method on the same genome sequence can sometimes leave you with different results. And that's just where we are.
Yeah, well, I thought it was apropos, your title about the Tower of Babel. And then you brought in the humor of looking for some of these crazy genes that have absolutely no basis.
So. Yeah, so there are... So there was this movie that came out called Assassin's Creed, and pretty bad movie, but a genetics testing company had this sort of tie-in offer where they would sequence your DNA. Typically, they do it for genealogy, but they threw in a warrior gene test. Do you have the warrior gene? And, you know, there was some research like 20 years ago finding like one variant seemed to be kind of elevated in some people who were showing aggression, and so people sort of spun this up into a big story that, oh, if you have this variant, you are a warrior, and they call it the warrior gene. Google warrior gene.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
And you pay, what, a couple $100, $99 or something like that?
Yeah, like it was $89. I paid for that myself because it was so ridiculous. I wasn't going to ask anybody to pay for it. So I have the warrior gene, which is ridiculous. But, you know, I've also been told I have a gene that makes me prone to male pattern baldness.
Yeah.
Thankfully,
it doesn't look like that one had a penetrant.
Yeah, it also says I have incredible muscular power. Like, and I mean, anybody who knows me knows that's a lie. So I'm not a, you know, powerful warrior.
Well, I think...
powerful warrior. That's not me.
I think this exemplifies when healthy people have their genome sequenced. Right. They should be, at this point, not expecting too much, and they might want to save their money when the price drops. And when it's more informative, when a billion or 100 million people, hundreds of millions of people are sequenced, mm-hmm. so we know a lot more. But
But people are getting flooded with advertising.
I know. Well, they're also getting a lot of these, as was brought up, these companies that are direct to consumer. They have no legitimacy, so that it's a real problem. Now, you besides the New York Times, Stat News is kind of an up and coming for biomedical news. It's actually taken the world by storm in some respects. Can you tell us about how that all came together? Because it seemed like it's like a year and a half into it, and it's just every day coming out with some nuggets.
Yeah, it kind of came out of the blue for me as well. I got a call from someone I had worked with in the past, and he said, "Hey, I'm involved in this new project called Stat. We're going to be unveiling it in a few months, and we want to talk to you about maybe getting involved." And it was the brainchild of John Henry, the owner of the Boston Globe, and he looked around the Boston area and just saw, you know, all this amazing stuff that was happening in biotechnology and medicine and so on, and he just felt like things were just not being reported enough. There was just so much opportunity, and he just decided he was going to launch a publication, and he wasn't going to just hire like a few interns to steal copy from other people. He actually hired Rick Burke, who had been a long time at the New York Times and then at Politico, and Rick was building this team of just great journalists, you know, really seasoned people like Sharon Begley and Helen Branswell, and then young and up and coming people. And the mission was to really just bring tough, insightful, and also fun sometimes journalism to this world, and to take advantage of, you know, being a website as opposed to, you know, a paper journal like the Boston Globe. So I've been doing a video series. They have lots of animations. They do all sorts of things, and they're very active in social media and so on. So it's, and you know, they've been breaking big stories and really holding people to task when, you know, because there's a lot of serious problems in our medical system.
Oh yeah.
In addition to all the great promising research.
Well, I just in the last week they were I think the first or one of the very first to about the CRISPR patent award, and mm-hmm. I mean just really on it. But what's interesting, at the same time, the Wall Street Journal coverage collapsed. I mean, they used to have a big Tuesday personal journal, and people like Ron Winslow and many others, they're no longer at the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And they basically, you know, were one of the go-to publications, and they just abandoned it, essentially.
Yeah.
Very little dedicated coverage. So it's great that there is a Stat News. One question I thought was interesting is, I think there's a tapeworm species named after you. How did that ever happen?
Well, I wrote a book about parasites called Parasite Rex, and the basic thrust of the book is that parasites as a life form have been given a bad rep. They're just considered these sort of degenerate things you don't need to think about, when in fact parasites have basically won the game. There are more species of parasites by far than any other form of life. And they take all sorts of crazy, bizarre forms. They sort of push life to its limits. You know, the ability of a parasite to go, from one host to another, like four or five different species, and transforming itself into radically different forms along the way, manipulating their behavior, all these crazy things. They're amazing.
Yeah.
And so I wrote this book, and there have been a few people who have gotten in touch with me and said that, you know, they had read the book and that kind of influenced them in terms of their career choice. And so one of these people actually, you know, in college read the book and said, oh, they're actually like grown-ups who study parasites. So she became a parasitologist. And,
oh, wow.
And part of her PhD project was she had several species of tapeworms from a fish, a giant shark-like fish, caught off the coast of Indonesia, and there were new species. So
wow.
She named Acanthobothrium zimmeri for me.
Oh, that's cool. That really is a great story. Well, you know, in some ways, it's correlates with this amazing journey you've been on, where you start off, you know, with an English background in writing, and then you become one of the leading science writers of our era. So it's really fantastic to have the chance to visit with you, Carl, and to learn about the things that you're doing. And we know you're going to keep doing it. And I'm looking forward to Heredity. When do you expect that might come out?
The plan is for that to come out in fall of 2018, next year.
Oh,
next
wow.
fall.
That's terrific. Well, we'll very much look forward to that. So thanks very much for joining us in this conversation with Carl Zimmer. And we look forward to bringing more of some of the most interesting people in biomedicine. Thank you.